So this film Odyssey that everyone's going on about, it's got massive rave reviews on this Rotten Tomatoes thing, both from the people and from the reviewers. And I can't help but thinking that something's going on. I can't help but thinking that something's afoot, and that while it's still in the cinema, they're only allowing 3-star reviews and above. Because, first of all, the dialogue is incredibly cliched and weird. The fact that most of it is spoken in an American accent.
Promise me you will come back.
What if I can't?
Really doesn't help. The dialogue is, it's like watching Bold and the Beautiful, if you've seen that. It's one of those really, really corny American soap operas about rich people living in California or somewhere like that, or on Friends, you know, Days of Our Lives and Dr. Jake Remora. It's like that. It's that kind of dialogue. You know, we must find the... It's really, really sort of cliched, hackneyed dialogue. They best expressed in the phrase, like some snivelling bastard, which I heard one of the people in it use. And that makes it very, very difficult to suspend disbelief. Also, I suppose they've made the decision to have them speak in a kind of modern way, but then that is juxtaposed with them using phraseology that they would have used, or presumably would have used at the time, such as, it is the law of Zeus. So they really do have to make their mind up. Are we going to have them speak in a with a certain degree of verisimilitude, in which case we should get rid of the modern cliches like snivelling bastard, or are we going to have them speak just in a purely modern way? But the cliché dialogue, it grated. It wasn't quite right. It made it relatively difficult to suspend disbelief. And so that was the first problem. The quality of the acting was variable. I mean, we're either meant to say, oh, it was absolutely brilliant, or we're meant to condemn it and say it was terrible. It was variable. The worst, there was a particular actor by the name of Tom Holland, and he was extremely wooden. He didn't have much emotional expressiveness where I thought he should have done. He didn't really help. Other acting was reasonably good. Matt Damon, who was the main character, he was emotionally raw and immersed in the role, and that was convincing. The much condemned Lupita Nyong'o, whatever her name is, that played Helen of Troy, actually was very, very good acting. And I'll come back to that. That was an interesting choice. She was actually an extremely good actor, a very, very powerful actor of powerful and difficult emotions. And there was an actor called Samantha Morton, who played Circe, her name is. There's some amazing scenes with her, really frightening scenes, where you really feel immersed and you really feel that you're there and you really feel that you forget that you're watching a film that has been panned as because of politically correct colorblind casting or whatever. You know, there are some scenes in it where there is really superb acting that draws you in, and you feel like you're there and you're immersed, and it's fascinating and it's amazing, and you know, there were some real high points in it. And there was some scenes where she's involved, it involves turning people into pigs, that were really, really very, very well done in my view. The atmosphere was weird. Certainly the scenes in it near the beginning, it's almost like being in a Viking longhouse or something, rather than in ancient Greece. Whether they're meant to be ancient Turkey or Troy. It's very, very strange atmosphere, very, very dark. And there's not much effort made with regard to verisimilitude in relation to the costumes. This is the Bronze Age, and we have people wearing obviously iron, whatever, steel armor. It doesn't fit. And again, it's this sort of darkness, this pervading darkness that you get by it's not something that one would really associate with the Mediterranean. It's more something that one would associate with the Northlands, the mysterious Northlands, where the nights are very, very long and all this kind of thing. So I don't think that didn't make me feel, particularly right from the beginning when they're dining, that I was in Bronze Age Greece. It made me feel more that I was in sort of 7th, 8th century Norway. So I thought that was a very strange kind of kind of choice. It didn't really fit. One of the things that they do change a number of things from the actual poem. One of the things is the psychology of it. So a lot of what happens in the original, like actually in the poem, is the gods directing you. In the same way that in the Bible, you know, God decides that there will be a center flood or whatever. The gods decide things, and the gods are negotiated with, and the gods appear to help you, and all this kind of thing. This is taken out of this film, which is an interesting choice, but it's not maintaining fidelity to the original poem, but it's kind of modernizing it as if it actually would have happened, assuming that the gods don't exist or whatever. And it instead focuses on the psychology of the characters. Now, this does actually mean that you have some characters that have more depth. So, for example, the key character, the Matt Damon character, in the poem, it's the gods that stand in the way of him getting home and make things complicated and all this kind of thing. In the film, he's full of self-doubt and regret, and he's not sure he's the same person anymore, and he's kind of scared of going home. And so he makes it complicated for him to go home. It's very much a theme of this guy Nolan. I mean, he's the Interstellar, that's one of his films, and Inception, that's another one. And you have this idea of people that get separated from their families and they go a bit mad. And so you have this same idea here. Again, with his wife, Penelope, rather than in the actual poem, you don't get any of this. She gets terribly upset about how she's treated, and she goes into kind of a sense of grief and psychological breakdown and gets very upset because her husband's away, that she's not being treated like a queen anymore. So they impose upon the text a psychological depth to the characters that is not actually there in the poem, or at least to some of the characters. And now you could argue that makes it more interesting to watch from a modern perspective, but also it's not being faithful to what these people are portrayed as having been in the poem itself. Before I do that, would you do me a favour? Would you please subscribe? Would you subscribe on YouTube? Would you give it a like? Would you give it a thumbs up? Will you give it a comment and hit the bell button and all that? And then you also subscribe to my Substack, that's johnnyhedrick.com, where I put all the most base stuff I don't put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, films I make, including my new Moldova film, where you can get a free sample. And if you like what I do, you can support for the cost of a pint of beer a month. Okay, back to the movies. There are a number of ways in which it is not faithful to the poem. For example, there's a bag of winds in the poem where he's given a bag of winds and told not to open it, and then his crew open it and thinking it's treasure or something, and then he gets blown back to where he originally was, which delays the journey home. That is cut completely. The Lotus Eaters, the whole notion of the Lotus Eaters, where they end up on this island and they're drugged and lose their memories because of being given lotuses, that's removed completely, and it's brought together into one scene where he ends up with Calypso, who is this woman who, in the poem, she woos him with her sewing and her singing, but in this they merge together the Lotus Eaters, and she woos, and she basically makes him lose his memory and woos him and has an affair with him and whatever, using the lotus flowers to drug him. So there's many, many, many other examples of changes to the plot, which people who are purists might not like. There's actually a 1997 version of the film, of the Odyssey film, which is much more faithful to the plot. One thing that's very good about, another thing they get rid of, is in the film that there's Circes, who I mentioned earlier, is his lover in the poem. This is not the case in the witch Circes, is his lover. This is not the case in the film. She's just this witch that he has to, who turns his men into pigs, and there's lots and lots of little changes like that. One thing that was very good was how it created an atmosphere. When it's the battle scenes, through the use of music, through the use of dramatic tension, through the use of lighting, through all kinds of, you feel you're there. You feel you're experiencing what it must be like to be in a battle. You feel that you're experiencing what it must be like to try and take a castle, and have the fear and how your heart's thumping through your chest and all that. That's very, very good. And other bits in the film that are meant to be frightening, they are actually frightening. You feel that you're there, you're immersed in it. So I can't deny that also works. The film is obviously far too long. It's almost 3 hours long. The last time I had to deal with something like that was when I was watching Lord of the Rings. And by the time I was in about 2001, and by the time I was halfway through it and they get to, I don't know what it's called. Is it called Caer Paravel or is that Chronicles of Narnia? I can't remember. But they get to some city, some beautiful city. And it's an hour and a half in. And I think finally, surely now it is over. And no, there was another hour and a half to go. And it's the same with this. It's like, get on with it. It goes on and on and on with unnecessary dialogue and all kinds of pointless stuff. And it just went on and on and on. It's far too long. They could have made it 2 hours long, I'm sure, if they had made judicious cuts. The other thing that, of course, has gained a lot of attention in this film is the silly casting. It just immediately means that it's hard to suspend disbelief. You know you're being got at. You know that they're trying to impose their ideology upon you. You know that they're trying to take a sort of sacred text from European history and show that they are in control, and they are so in control of you that they can rewrite, they can remake this sacred text, and they can impose their own ideological agenda on it because they're in charge, and they're showing you that they're in charge, and they're daring you to criticize it and therefore be evil and be an outcast. And that, of course, prevents you from suspending disbelief and therefore prevents you from immersing yourself in the film. And that was a very bad idea. Right at the beginning, you have this Elliot Page pointless character. The character that she plays, it's not even in the poem. It's completely stupid, waste of time, absurd. And then you have very quickly some sort of black gangster from New York getting up and leading the feast right at the beginning of the film. It's so absurd. But in many ways, it's more absurd is the extent that they go for it. It's not good enough to just have a few black people in it. It's not good enough to have Helen of Troy played by a black woman. You have to have a multicultural group of friends, a black, a South Asian and East Asian, all together asserting, we are Greek in Bronze Age Europe. Those actual words, we are Greeks. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. However, one thing that occurred to me with regard to the way that it's highly psychological and it looks at the psychology behind things rather than simply what's in the poem, which is that the gods are directing what people do. In a sense, it was interesting to have a black woman playing Helen of Troy because it kind of others her. And let's assume it's a face that launched 1,000 ships. You know, let's assume that this woman, the archetypal man killer, this incredible woman, both physically and psychologically, who men will do anything for, who men can be manipulated by. Well, what kind of woman is that going to be? That's probably going to be a woman with some kind of personality disorder, with vulnerable narcissism of some kind, or borderline personality disorder, where you feel feelings very, very strongly, and you go through narcissistic phases and collapse phases, and you fear abandonment very strongly, and you manipulate men to look after you, and you idealize them as wonderful, but then you de-idealize them as appalling, and then they get bonded to you via a trauma bond. It probably would have been a highly charismatic and significant woman. She may well have been a bit like that. And so then the idea of making her other, of showing how unusual, how strange that psychology is by having her as black is quite interesting. And I should emphasize that the actress in question was extremely good. She was an extremely good actor. So I don't know, maybe I should, if I was trying to be absurdly positive about this film, then what I would say is that in the same way that with Ben Jonson, the playwright, the 16th century playwright, and for example, the play Volpone, he criticised, he said, plays should be within the Aristotelian rules of drama. They should take place in one day, they should have a tragic hero, blah, 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 blah. And we should stick to those rules. And because we stick to those rules, we impose these straitjackets on ourselves. It forces us to be more creative because we've got these rules that we've imposed. Whereas what Shakespeare does is he breaks with this and he doesn't stick to those rules really at all. And then he goes off and does all kinds of stuff. But Ben Johnson criticised this. He said, well, you're making it kind of too easy for yourself. Now, you could argue that the maker of this film has had to stick within certain rules which make it more difficult. They literally make it more difficult to suspend disbelief, such as having a multiracial cast, all of that sort of thing. They make it more difficult for him. And because of that, he has to work much harder to produce something that is any good. And it's much more difficult to produce something that's any good. And therefore, he has to be more creative. And perhaps that has forced him to do that. The fact that he's had to, the fact that it's more difficult to suspend disbelief. You therefore have to make an even better film with even better acting and even better dialogue and even better plot. I think that's going rather too far. That's rather romanticizing this film. They engaged in this silly casting, and it was unnecessary, and it makes people feel they're being got at, and there's just no point to it. So overall, would I pay to go and see this film? No. It probably might work better if I was, because of the bits in it that are highly dramatic and whatever, it would have probably be more immersive in a cinema. But would it be worth paying to go and see this film? I wouldn't have thought so, no. Is it worth watching? Yes, because everyone's going on about it. And it's going to be a significant cultural moment, as it were. And I wouldn't say it's like wasting 2.5. It's worth, or 3 hours. It's good enough that it's worth having a look at for free online, because it's culturally significant. Everyone's going on about it. And it's okay. It's an okay film. It's all right. Maybe. Yeah. 3 stars. Maybe. Yeah. So, like some snivelling bastard. I hope this has helped, and goodbye.
Are you ready for the future of the West?